Hello everyone and welcome to another HMG episode. This one is again just me by myself, but I have something a little bit different up. This is Tabletop Simulator. And I thought this would be a good idea to demonstrate how I use, or how you can use, forward observers. So both the observer type who is the artillery observer, or the forward air observer. And this will help give an idea using a map and some digital miniatures. It will give you an idea of what this can actually look like, the line of sight ideas, where it needs to go, and just what ranges and things that can be done on the battlefield. So I'll just get into talking about what I mean by observers and how to use them. So what I'm going to do is just take these two units and put them over here on this road. That's about 12 inches in or so. You can see they scatter a little bit, but they will be a target, an example that we use. What is an observer? Well, an observer is one of our forms of models that we can use in bolt action. They oftentimes can forward deploy, so that allows them to be further up the field, you know, in these sorts of spaces, as opposed to anything else. That didn't do what I thought it would do, never mind. They can often be halfway up the board, your half, in terrain, deployed after everything else normally goes on the table. Missions will dictate that, of course. What it allows you to do is place that model to be, first of all, protected, but second of all, you know, it allows you to place them wherever you would like, so they have good line of sight. So just going to zoom in a little bit here, so you can see I could actually pick him up and put him just behind. Let's see if I can get this thing to work here. Pop him just in there, in behind that wagon. And when we zoom in, you know, we can see if he was standing up, he can see over to the here officer, or her officer, here officer, and the rifle squad. So line of sight just works the same for them when they do their actions. They function in that case like most other units, which you'll probably understand from playing games with them. But then it's what do they actually do as those units? So they can have assistance, but oftentimes they'll be by themselves, and the two different forms, or the two main forms, being artillery observer and forward air observer, they function quite differently. How's the best way to put this? You either take the artillery observer for suppression, and he will put pins on a section of the board for the opponents to get to. Or you take the air observer if you want some targeted damage. Now, there's a pros and cons with that targeted damage, and there's some restrictions around how things come in and how they play. But we'll get to that, I suppose, in a little bit longer. The real thing is, when using them, it's important to understand that they're not like other units that automatically deal damage, or typically could be counted on to deal damage. And strip models off the board. Both options do have results that would lead to that, but they also have consequences, like they can hold off or be miscalculated. It's known as obviously rookie pilot or miscalculation, where the attacks that you're trying to land on the enemy instead turn around and possibly land on your forces, which is not particularly good. Many people will complain about the rookie pilot and the miscalculation being one of the sole reasons that they didn't get momentum in a particular game. But it's also that there's a delay mechanic or a changing of target. So even once you get that unit into position and you're like, okay, I know what I want to do, I'm going to try and target this rifle squad and the officer, it may not turn up. Which means you need to think a little bit harder about when you use that activation, when is it best placed, what is the best thing to do with it. So I'll go into then just talking about the artillery observer to start with. The artillery observer is normally around 100 points for your models. And typically at around 100 points for regular, they're the same cost as a 10-man rifle unit, and they have a powerful attack. They would, once they're forward deploy and you allocate them a fire order, that's when their special ability is going to tick off, and generally that means that you're going to go, I'm going to declare a point on the battlefield, let's say here, in that space there, and in that space, I want the observer to drop a marker. So he would drop a marker down. In this instance, I'm just going to use a dice. He would drop a marker down in that crop field, and that becomes the target point for the barrage. You would then roll a dice to make sure that that dice actually, that it comes in or is delayed or is miscalculated and scattered from that point in the current turn, sorry, in the future turn, the start of the next turn. A 1 is a miscalculation, a 2 or a 3 is a scatter, where you would actually move this around up to 12 inches and change that target point to where you could follow infantry or vehicles with it. Use it in slightly different ways, which I'll talk about in a moment. Or you get the 4, 5 or 6, and the 4, 5 or 6 vary. That just basically locks it in. It's gonna bombard in this area, and you can proceed to that section of the rule. The rule itself, in a nutshell, you're going to end up with up to a 12-inch line that goes out this way and out this way. So it's gonna be a circle in that sort of a space. But it's variable. It's anything from sort of a 6-inch bubble to a 12-inch bubble, 12 inches, of course, to that center marker, which means really, as you can see, I'm drawing concentric circles here, or similar set circles. You have potentially a small area or a larger area, and if you're going out at your maximum space, you're actually covering almost a good sort of quarter of that back board edge, depending on where you've put your marker. Now, so let's say we rolled it, we've got our 4, which means 4 plus our 6-inch diameter, that's going to give us a 10-inch bubble. So we know that everything in that 10-inch bubble is potentially impacted. Now, yes, you go on and you roll the different impacts and the different, whether they take pins, whether they take a heavy howitzer hit from it coming in and landing on them on the roll of the 6, but generally, you're going to put pins on the target unit. You're not actually going to put too much damage on them, because on a 1-5 you're going to generate pins. Now, whilst that might seem like it's not fantastic, because you're paying 100 points and your chances of actually doing any real damage is quite low, you need to think about what the impact of having a large section of the board getting struck with pins is. Especially if you do well and you get 2-3 pins per unit across that entire board edge, or that entire circle section that you're talking about, that is actually that's quite a lot of disruption that you're putting on your opposing force, on the opponent's force. 3 pins is at that break point where you don't really want to risk attempting an order. And you do actually want to take a rally, or at least keep them down, because you want to shed those pins. We've talked about that before on the podcast, how the pins are critical in managing the flow of the game in bolt action, and this is a way of being able to put down a large number of pins in one time. The other thing it means is that if you have these multiple pins that are suddenly generated, your regular units down here, when they move up in a position to shoot at your opponent, right? And they go, right, well, we want to go, how far away is this? And we want to go, yep, so they're going to shoot over there. That's actually measuring up in the air, I think it is, because that's probably a bit longer than 10 inches, but you can measure that you know, that distance out, and you go, well, I know that unit's already got a pin. So that determines whether do I shoot the officer who's on one pin, or do I shoot the squad who's on three? Well, you know that the squad's less likely to activate, so it might be worth taking the shots at the officer. He's harder to hit and everything like that, but if you can put an extra pin on him, that will mean that he's less likely to take more pins off the unit. And it's that decision making that is across all the units that it caught in that radius. There's also the threat of the damage. Like if this does come in and cause damage, it's a 4-inch template, and the 4-inch template in most cases is going to cover a whole squad. That is not a small amount of damage, especially when it's going to have +4 penetration. Most people, when that template comes in, if they haven't sent that squad down, they know that that squad's probably going to get eliminated. And instead of up to 3 pins, it's up to 6. But that damage is always needed to be thought of as the bonus of an artillery barrage. You will have instances where it does really well. You will have instances where it doesn't do really well. But really what you're looking for is that suppression so that you can hold an element of your opponent's army. So let's just move all this stuff off here for a second. Yes, 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 both of you move that. And let's say that these two units are further down the road here. Oop. Just turn that rifleman the right way up. Hey, pay attention. Okay. So they've all stood up. Now, if we're in turn, this might be turn 2 or turn 3. Observer is still there, but you've actually decided to hold off and wait for your strike. And the reason that you chose to do that is because now, let's say the objective is in the middle of the wheat field, and you want to stop them going in the wheat field, you could preemptively strike that spot on the battlefield in turn 3 with the sole intent. Let me try and just get this up here. With the sole intent to box out this area. It's not quite doing what I want. You can just see that circle coming up there, and it goes the whole way around. You'd be looking to box out that area so that they can't take that objective. Turn 3 and 4, you know, you'll start to see units move in positioning on objectives 5 and 6, obviously running towards it to try and capture it. But if there's a artillery barrage marker there and your opponent is a little bit uncomfortable with being this close, they may not move away over, like further away out of the range. They could if the unit is particularly mobile or, I guess, vulnerable to the bombardment. But it takes a very brave commander or bold commander to actually advance into that space where you're pretty much going to guarantee that they're going to be hit by that bombardment of that initial 6 inches. That's a way to control your opponent's movement. It's not the only thing that you could use it for, because you can obviously, instead of placing it on an objective, if they have outflank or reserve units that they want to bring on, you could instead put the artillery marker where you're expecting them to come on, and you move that circle, and that circle starts to come on in the backfield here where those objectives are. And you go, that's fine, you can have all the reserves and space you want, but I don't want you using this avenue. I want you using this avenue over this way. And if you create the spaces that you're comfortable with the enemy walking into, and negating other spaces or posing a risk to them in those areas, you may find that your opponent actually says, I don't want to go near that barrage. I don't particularly want to be in a space where I don't have a lot of cover. So if we look at the board as a whole, maybe I have to come on back through these forests, which will slow them down a bit more. They're less likely to get bayonet shots out. Vehicles are going to struggle through that space. Certainly wheeled vehicles are. Tractor vehicles will, you know, come through it, but then there's a giant field in front of them. There's no cover necessarily from that. They probably want to use the cover from this courtyard and the set of townhouse buildings. Well, you're trying to deny them that so that they can't use it, which means that you're going to get good shots on them with your anti-tank assets or your, you know, with your high powerful, your high explosive heavy howitzers or heavy mortars or any of your HE, your mobile HE. You want to be able to position those attacks so that you can shoot with relatively unimpeded lines of sight. You won't be able to avoid the cover on a board like this. Like, they'll get something in most cases, but what you want is the line of sight. You want to be able to see things. And so cutting down where they're able to move is a way of getting that line of sight in your favor. Just move these guys back into the field. Now, obviously, because it's a circle that goes out potentially 24 inches of each side, the benefit really stacks up when you can get multiple units in that range. When you can get more than one unit or more than two or three units in that space. Let's look at this and say that not only do we have those infantry units, but we also have a vehicle. Now, all of a sudden, that's four units. One, two, three, and four. You guys obviously can see that. But that's four units that you're going to be impacted. Now, by doing this, you're obviously increasing how many dice you're going to throw when you do that. That barrage and how far that circle is going to go out. You know, again, it could go both directions here. It's going to go in a big radius, but you know that the minimum distance that I'm trying to draw, that minimum distance there is meant to be that 6 inches space. I think it's not quite 6 inches on what I'm drawing at the moment. But even if it was something like this, okay, you know that that's going to be probably your primary space that you're going to hit things on either side of that. And so putting it in the middle of those three units, you're going to hit three spaces. A little bit further than this, the sort of 6-7 inch mark, then you're getting the tank as well, because it goes all the way around. This is where you want to start looking at placing those bombardments if everything is already on the board and deployed, or particularly if you've got some veteran units that you want to hold in place, if you want to have, if you want to look at holding in place your opponent's heavy weapon units, whether if they've got lots of heavy weapons, using the bombardment like that will help to put pins on those units and hold them in place. That might give you enough time for the rest of your force, wherever it be over in this space, over here, it might give you the rest of the time for you to set up correctly so you can actually take these units on piecemeal, or allow you to reposition completely so that you don't have to deal with them and you can actually try and pull back into more cover, or you could get your own assets in a position to get a flanking shot on the vehicle. If you were over here, for example, with your tank, you know, come down and have a look and you go, right, I can see the Panzer III is going to be a flank shot. Yes, they got cover, but I'll get that nice penetration bonus. Those are all things that become options to you when you've immobilized the opponent assets. I'm presuming that you'll all understand how that has an impact. So where possible, you want to try and get as many units as possible, provided that you're going to be able to take advantage of what happens. That's probably the big thing that I don't necessarily see a lot of people doing when they get started with using observers, is actually trying to synergize what the bombardment does with a follow-up plan on how you can actually maximize the impact that you're having. If you want the best benefit out of that 100-point investment to get a forward artillery observer, and for the air observer, which we'll go into, you need to be able to capitalize on what you do. So if you're not ready to capitalize, think about just holding off that bombardment and maybe doing it a turn later. Or think about the denying the area for them to advance into. It can be very strong if you know that their reserves are coming on from the back edge as opposed to outflank. It's a bit harder with outflank because obviously it's left or right, you don't know. And the longer they stay in outflank, the more of this board edge they can actually go up and down. But in terms of how I typically tend to use it, if that's what it does and that's how it operates and that you're looking for a wide spread of suppression, I really have it down in three categories. The first category is there something in reserve that I want to hold back? Is there something in reserve that I want to try and control where it appears on the board? Is there something other, are we having to force everything into the first wave, where I can actually dictate what's dangerous or not for my opponent to bring on for first wave? The second one is, okay, so if those things are not in play, that means that probably everything else has been deployed onto the board on turn one. I would need to be very conscious of my observer going down and the opposing sniper, because you need to make sure they're protected because they're sniper bait, because no one likes to even take the chance that they're going to get multiple pins or a heavy howitzer bombardment. But if everything's on the board, I then look at, okay, how many units am I able to get reliably if I put the bombardment in the middle there? Do I hold off and do I wait for them to get a bit closer, a bit further away? What's most critical? And then the third instance for me is there a space on the battlefield that I want to hold the bombardment off for and instead deny that advance into that area later in the game? Now that's tricky because you need to keep your observer alive longer, which doesn't tend to happen if you put him in range of a sniper. But those are the three key things that I think about. And typically, if I'm going to try and trap multiple units at once, sometimes it's better to wait until the end of turn one, because at the end of turn one, you may have your opponent start advancing their units, you have the officer move, but then you might have this unit might go this way, and wow, that looked really bad, and then the tank might, you know, just drive up a little bit. Now when you're at that position, these units are obviously spread a lot more further out, which means that it's unlikely that you're going to get both of them if you put the marker approximately in the middle. So you may actually decide to go, it's more important that these units are affected, or actually I don't have anything to deal with the tank, so the tank definitely has to be targeted. But I want to get the unit that's next to him as well, or I want to get the officer that's next to him as well, so I'll try and put it somewhere in here. You may have to choose to let one of the other options go to prioritize the threats to your battle plan. But the advantage is if all of these units have moved, then you can put this down, and when the turn resets, they can't run away from it straight away because you're going to roll for it to come in immediately. So you've got a 50-50 chance of it landing before they can move. That is quite good. That is quite good and worth considering if you are concerned that you've been outmaneuvered in deployment and that you don't have something to protect one of the flanks. You can try and land the observer strike on them after they've moved. That should help delay that until you plug that gap in your line or reconsolidate everything so that you're giving up that table quarter, but drawing a stronger line, for example, on the other side. The other piece to remember with these is that they are high risk, high reward. So just having the observer in the force may not be enough. It's not a guaranteed. It is a bit of a gamble. The gamble may very well pay off, but it also could be completely bogus. You may find that the information that you gain from this doesn't help you because your opponent has just simply spread out too far, and so you don't feel like you can impact anything. You may feel that you never have a good time to use it, or that when you use it, it's too early, or that the opponent's able to move away from it easily. Or sometimes you may actually find, actually my opponent didn't care at all, and I don't really understand why I bothered paying the 100 points. I would rather have purchased an extra 10 infantry models. So once again, those things are going to come down to your play style and your preferred way of playing the game and how you want to interact. So they're not for everybody. I know of plenty of lists that do not run an observer because they want the consistency of a rifle shot or a light machine gun in the unit compared to a 50-50, possibly do some suppression, might do some damage if we're lucky. And that's fair. That's where I would probably start looking at, if that's what you want to do. You're not after observers, you're after other types of units that are going to give you that bonus. I'm just going to rearrange these models here a little bit because we're going to start talking about the air observer. The air observer is a little bit interesting. I should be a bit more careful about that. Actually, we'll put these guys here near the hay bales. Just ignore the fact that it's going to take me too long to set them all up the right way. I'll leave the observer where he is at the moment, but again, can forward deploy and essentially go anywhere you want, providing he's meeting his requirements. So instead of indicating a point on the battlefield, the air observer actually indicates a target unit. So let's say in this instance that these guys that I've just put near the hay bales, we're going to put the fire order on them. So same thing, you use the fire order to use the special ability. You have to be able to see the target. There's no range, so I didn't mention that with the artillery barrage, but there's actually no range associated with his attack. It's just so long as you can see. You've got to be able to see the exact point, and this you've got to be able to see for the airstrike observer. You've got to be able to see the target unit. So let's put the marker down and tag that unit. From that point on, once you've tagged the unit, it doesn't actually matter where they move to, that marker's going to follow them. It doesn't matter whether they run away or run forward or anything like that. That marker's going to follow them regardless for when they need to come in, for when you roll for it. And it will remain targeted until it either comes in or you as the attacking player choose to reallocate. Typically what will happen is your opponent's unit will get hit with the marker, and they will start running towards your lines because they want to get that airstrike as far away from their remaining force as they possibly can. There's not a huge amount you can do about that except for shoot that unit to try and hold them back. Of course, if you kill that unit, the airstrike is going to come in on that spot and essentially do nothing. The attack itself will be wasted. It's slightly better than a rookie pilot because you don't get attacked by your own aircraft, but it's also not fantastic at that time. There's a lot of things where it's just, it would be better if you missed it altogether as opposed to getting that rookie pilot, just because the rookie pilot can be quite punishing and it's very unintended. And that's really because the rookie pilot turns what should have been an attack for you into an attack from the enemy, because for the airstrike in particular, the enemy chooses one of your units on the board and drops an airstrike on them instead. So, not good. Now, when it actually comes to executing on the airstrike, there are some rules in the book that determine how this is, and one of the first ones is that you actually have to put another marker about something like this. It needs to be 18 inches away. It can't be smaller than or greater than. It has to be that 18 inch circle. An important thing to remember if that's the case is that your marker, if that was, you know, it's probably just over 18 inches, I think, on a scale map, but your marker essentially is this, that circle that you're getting that attack vector on from the plane is essentially anywhere in that white circle, on the edge of that white circle. So when you're declaring a target, whilst it's important to hurt the target, one of the things that I often consider is, where can I put that strafe marker to come in on that 18 inch circle that's also going to impact the enemy? Because there's no benefit to banking it all the way away from absolutely everybody. And that's mainly because the things that shoot at the marker to destroy the plane or, you know, veer it away from the flak attack are machine guns that have a range of 36. So this is a 36 inch circle. And so unless your opponent is on the outside over here, their 36 inches is going to reach almost the full way across that circle. And the closer the units are to your circle edge boundary at this point, like if the Panzer III had a pin tool that was pointed at the sky, as an example, if it was able to, as an example, it's inside the circle. It can shoot at that plane irrespective of wherever you're putting it. It doesn't matter. Flak is, you only need, I think it's 3 successful hits on the plane to drive the plane away, and no attack is conducted, no pins are dropped. It just drives it off. And every weapon that is able to, friend and foe, will attempt to shoot at the plane. So it doesn't take, you only need 3 successful hits. It always hits on a 5 or a 6, and it's just to basically scare the plane off. And that's one of the reasons why they feel overcosted. It's very easy to stop the plane. But let's say that it has not been driven off. This first unit here is our target, and we are going to put our plane marker here. So that's going to do two things next. The first thing is that the target and everyone within 6 inches of the target, keep drawing these from the wrong side, everyone within 6 inches of the target, like something like that, everybody in that space is going to take D3 minus one pins. And then conversely, on this side, everyone within 6 inches of this marker is also going to take D3 minus one pins. This is where this position is, where the plane starts its dive, it comes in, and then it crosses over here, strafes its target, and goes away. So you've got to think of this as, like, the easiest way, I call this the dumbbell. So I imagine it's like the, you know, big sort of clown, circus dumbbell cartoon. So it's one ball, a stick, and another ball. And what you essentially have is two smaller areas of impact, but the only safe zone is directly in between both of them. What you want to try to do is to have this dumbbell spread out in like horizontally across your opponent's force, like this way, parallel to the board edge, if at all possible. Sometimes it might be a more oblique angle, but what you really want to avoid is going straight up and down. And the reason that you want to avoid coming in on a vector straight up and down is because your units tend to be over on this side, which is where that straight up and down leads to, right? So you always typically want to strafe, I think, left to right or right to left in most circumstances when it comes in, and you don't want to be doing it directly on and off. I don't know. There might be some situations where that is a better option, but typically you're going to get way more coverage by going left to right. Again, unless you need to hose down a unit that's on the objective, that's in the center of the board, that might be a reason to change that decision. But yeah, I would generally go left to right. Now, an airstrike as well, you're looking at suppression, you're looking at obviously the pin markers it generates, but the biggest difference is that this will do damage when it comes in. And so your target unit, when it comes in to get shot at here, they will take damage. That's quite important. There are three different types of aircraft. I won't cover those, what they are, because they're in the rulebook. But essentially, it's a light attack craft, a medium attack craft, and a heavy attack craft. And they are quite powerful attacks. Most have the ability to hit and hurt any target. But unlike the artillery observer, you can't use this as a preemptive move. You can't use it to lock down a reserve. You can hold the airstrike back and wait for the target to present itself and call it in on the target. Like I said, it doesn't matter whether that target moves or hides. Whilst you can go down to being shot as a reaction, there's nothing else really you can do. And so it's like once you're zoomed in, your options as the target is either run towards the opponent and try and get that airstrike as far away from your units as possible, scare the plane off in the flak attack phase or step where you would try and drive the plane off, or get your unit killed so that the attack is wasted. Ironically, like that sounds really silly, but sometimes that's actually the better play, is just to not worry about it and get your unit killed. Just like with most other regular attacks, if you are in a truck, the airstrike and the target for that airstrike has to be the truck and not the unit inside, because the unit inside can't be targeted. But interestingly enough, if the unit is targeted by the airstrike and they then decide to get into a truck because they want to try and be protected, so let's be like, the truck's like, yeah, cool, just get in my truck, you'll be safe from the airstrike. No, that doesn't save you from the airstrike, because it's already been called in on you as a target. And in fact, if you end up with the template attack coming at your vehicle, your vehicle is going to automatically be clipped by the template. Two of the three attack planes have a template attack, so that would, I think, would be quite a risky move. But it's important to understand that you are selected as a target prior to embarking on the transport, and so you will stay a target. Nothing says that you get dropped as a target. Yeah, a bit of an abstraction in the rules, but the example I like to use is that airstrikes are homing. You could be targeted by an airstrike, jump in a vehicle, and drive under a mountain with a tunnel, and that airstrike is still going to find you. Just be aware of that. I don't often use airstrike observers as much as artillery observers. I find airstrike observers they're very expensive for the benefit that you get, especially because the plane is able to be driven off so easily. That doesn't necessarily mean they're bad. USA obviously get dual airstrikes, which that's beneficial because you're getting two for the price of one, but the cost is that they're just as simple to drive off as a regular plane, so there's no real protections or anything like that. It's just that you get two of them, and if you're sniped off before you get to use the second one or even the first one, you are instantly losing points. So again, watch that deployment, and if you're not sure that whether he can, if he's fully enclosed or not, put your observer somewhere else. Because you can always, at the end of a turn, move him out, and when the turn starts up again, make him your first dice. You could always do that as a desperate action if you're being hounded by a sniper. But that's where the other part of airstrikes come in. It's like, to make an airstrike really successful, you need to have removed as much anti-aircraft of a threat as you possibly can. So that means either putting pins on units that have pintle mounts or flak weaponry for anything that is on your side. You can attempt to hold fire, but it's better if you just try to get them out of range when you're placing that marker, that 18-inch marker. So just be aware of your weapons around that circle as well. But the real reason that I don't do a lot is, I see aircraft in the game, if you had more control over what type of aircraft it was, like in the experimental rules, then it's not so bad. A lot more weapons, a lot more choices, a lot more dangerous of a profile, but you've got control over where it hits and what it does and how powerful those attacks are. The rules as they are give you a 33 reoccurring chance or probability that you end up with that light aircraft, which, whilst it's still good against infantry, it tickles most tanks. It doesn't really do a huge amount of damage to those. You really need the medium or the heavy attack aircraft as more preferable. Vehicles are hit on their top armor, which makes them a little bit more vulnerable. But even with the plus one, you get to sort of a 9+ tank or a 10+ tank, and that armor still is quite strong against an airstrike. So it's not like unbeatably strong. I just find that they're better against infantry than they are against tanks. And the problem with that is, well, the rest of my army is already good against infantry and not against tanks. So why, unless I was playing the US, for example, and I got two runs at it, why would I take another good against infantry but not against tanks weapon system when that's the basis of my army? I'd rather spend those points on getting an anti-tank gun or an upgraded tank to combat the tank threat, or a bazooka team or a Panzerfaust, or, you know, any of the different, or Panzerschreck, or any of the different options available in the squads. That being said, I have played with both. The artillery observer, he generally sits with my playstyle a lot better. Generally is a defensive counterplay. And so, you know, I will often use him to lock out areas of the board, or just try and go, I don't want you coming over this edge, and so I'm just basically going to lock this out and say, no, you can't go there. Because I'll put the marker here so the reserves can't come on. Sometimes I want to force them into a place where they can't get good line of sight. Sometimes I want to force them into really hard ground. Sometimes it's holding that objective space because I don't want the opponent to get in there. And I want to have the priority of trying to get units. Or specifically on this map, for an example, it might be, like if we just look at this, it might be that I have, you know, let's say, slightly more terrain that I need to run through from my quickest avenue, whereas their quickest avenue has slightly less. And so I might actually put the bombardment down here with the sole intent that I'm going to try and hold their unit back to give mine time to get through the field onto the objective. It's a very select example, but it's things to consider, is that if your opposing player is fairly hesitant about this area because they don't want to get hit by an artillery observer strike, use that to your advantage. Like, really, really use that to your advantage, because that's something that you have in your list that you'll be able to leverage. So I hope that's given you an idea of some of the uses you can use. As always, you're going to have to go and play, and you're going to have to go read the rules for yourself and make sure you understand the timing of those interactions. Read it with the FAQ as well, because that does clarify a couple of points, especially going down in relation to an airstrike. But it's keep your observer safe from snipers. That's a number one priority. Think about what the purpose of your observer is. Artillery observers are there for suppression, not for kills. If you get kills, that's a bonus. Airstrike observers are there to get a kill, and the suppression is a bonus. But when you're using either suppression of either way of getting those pins and the suppression mechanics, you need to think about where you're going to get the most impact, and you need to make sure that you're not setting yourself up to fail by impacting your own units as best as possible. Try to do these airstrikes or these artillery strikes, try to land them after the opposing units have moved. It stops them from targeting your units by running towards them, but it also stops them being able to run away from that artillery strike and make sure that you can capture as many units as possible in that initial circle. Other than that, you're going to have to play with it and see whether it suits your playstyle. You may actually find, no, these don't work for me. I don't like it. I would rather just spend the 100 and odd points just doing it on another unit, and instead of worrying about having to keep this guy safe and getting line of sight and getting the timing right, you know what? Just give me another squad of infantry who I can then, as a result of them being another squad, I can just run that squad into this building and I can start providing covering fire or, this gives you other options to play with instead of just a 100-point man. The observers can still score, they've still got weapons they can fire, they still have all that good stuff, but they're still not a 10-man unit. And bolt action revolves quite heavily around the infantry, and so that is always a trade-off that I would consider in your army list and how you play. Are you somebody that would prefer just having 10 more bodies with rifles or weapon upgrades? Or do you want one of the bigger mass effect area of effect weapons, which you could then use? So have a play. There are obviously loads of stories where airstrikes and artillery strikes have ruined the opponent's day because they've just come in like absolutely perfect. We don't all, and we'll hear the like, we'll hear the other side of that coin where they were horrific and did nothing, or they reversed and they hit you even though they were yours. The what you don't hear is all the times in between where they made a difference, but not necessarily so critically game-changing that the game was over. Those are the experiences in between that you actually want to focus on. That's where your consistency comes in. They don't always make good stories, but it's where you get that consistency and the drive on how you're going to get better by using them and understanding what they do. Give them a go. We'll see. Certainly, we see them in Perth at the moment. I think they have value, providing that you understand how to play with them, but don't feel that you have to either. You guys know it's your hobby and you do it quite well. Anyway, that was a quick one from me. Something short, something a little bit different with the tabletop demo. If this tabletop demo makes more sense and you would like to see more of that sort of stuff being worked through, let us know, because I think all four of us have tabletop simulator, so we can run these sorts of demonstrations and actually visually show you what we're talking about. And we may even get another form of game on this as well. But anyway, we'll get into that later. It's been a blast, everyone. I hope this is information was useful to you, and we'll keep it up, and we'll see you in the next one. Bye, everyone.